paler than usual. Resisting the urge to tap on the window, I used the loaner pass card the guard had given me and swiped the door open. Heracles twisted towards me. I strode in. I didn't dare take off the mask, not with the camera in the corner. It appeared to be the only live one on the compound. "Hey," I said, "pretend like it's not me." He sat up. "What are you doing here, Lyssa?" he hissed, his face draining of all blood, then flaring red. "You cannot be here. Everyone..." Yeah, I know. I'm the Oracle." Speechless, he stared at me. "Ah, you didn't think anyone would tell me, did you?" I said, unable to prevent the note of pure glee that entered my voice. "Well, they did. The CISA raised the forest and the priests committed preemptive suicide. I came here with a mercenary, ran into a high priestess, then got captured by a guy named Adonis who turned out to be the head of this horrible place. Now I'm here to rescue you." He listened, unable to help the upturn of his lips at my story. "If you were any other person, this might surprise me." He rose. "What's your plan?" I glanced at the camera. "We need to get rid of that first." Stretching upwards, he knocked it to the side. "Done." I didn't hesitate. I tossed the iPad on his bed and shimmied out of the outer layer of clothing. I had overlapped two pairs of the guard clothing and gave him one and the oversized boots I'd stolen from Adonis. "To leave, go out the way you came in and follow the signs to the D Street exit," I instructed him. "You can show me." No. I straightened and turned my back to him while he changed. I gave it some thought. "I think you should leave without me." "Absolutely not." "Okay. He's tracking me, Heracles. Don't ask me how, but he's keeping an eye on me. I need you to leave so he can't threaten me anymore." "Who?" "The head of CISA." "Terrible plan, Lyssa." "Or is it secretly brilliant and you don't want to admit it?" "Not at all," I sighed. "Look, Heracles, they're on to me, and for whatever reason, this Adonis guy is serious about messing with me. But he also knows things I need to know, about my parents, my life before we met, about me," I explained. Heracles gazed at me. "I want to stay long enough to find out some things. That's it. If you leave, you can find help and break me out." "You make it sound simple," he said with a concerned frown. "Do you know what he is?" "Sort of," I said. Truthfully, I didn't. I knew Adonis was more than I could see, that he was connected to me.
"Did he hurt you?"
"No, he's trying to play mind games with me."
"You suck at games."
"Yeah, I know. But he wants me alive and has information I want, too," I said.
"I won't leave you here, Lyssa."
"Heracles." I sought some sort of middle ground. "Please. I'm not a little girl anymore. You prepared me for this my whole life. Give me 2 days here, then knock the front gate down and rescue me." He was considering me. I didn't know why my overprotective guardian hadn't already dragged me out of here unless... Would he betray me too? He knew I was the Oracle. Were the priests and he working together on whatever was going on? I crushed the thoughts. My Heracles would never disappoint me. If he was listening, it was because I had to be making sense, or he thought me old enough to make my own decisions. Or something else was going on here. I was skating on the semi-frozen surface of a lake, waiting for it to crack and me to plunge into the dark, cold waters below. No matter why my stomach was churning, no matter what reason he might have for leaving me here, I had to know he was safe before I'd feel comfortable skating onward. "Really, there's no way for both of us to leave here. He can sense me somehow. I'll endanger you. Our best shot is for you to escape and bring back an army of... someone. Just avoid the mercs, 'cause they'll stab you in the back. Adonis has said he won't hurt me, at least not before I meet the Supreme Magistrate in a few days." Yeah, I totally just lied to my only friend. A brief silence fell, and then Heracles chuckled. My Lyssa, all grown up after 2 days on her own. The terse note in his voice was one I hadn't heard before. It's been a learning experience, I said, quoting him. Will you go? Please? I don't think I'm in any danger right now. If anything, I think Adonis wants to see what makes me tick. I can see that about him, but the members of the Triumvirate will destroy you. I imagine they will wait for the full moon, when the barrier between our worlds and that of the gods is thinnest. That gives me a week, but I wouldn't take that long. They won't harm you before submitting you to the trials, either. Trials. More evidence he knew so much more than he had ever shared. It wasn't the right time to ask him to share. I wasn't remotely scared about some stupid trial. I just couldn't live with myself if Heracles was hurt, or worse, because of me. Exactly. It's a plan. Leave, go get help, and rescue me. Then things will go back to the way they were, and we'll be happy in the forest again. Lyssa, he said gravely and turned me to face him. Things will never be the way they were. Yes, they will. They have to be. You can make them be, I said, a tremor of emotion in my voice. I didn't want to admit this was my life. Gazing into his dark eyes, I was forced to face some of the emotion I'd been avoiding. I love you, I said, my throat tight. I want us to be happy again. He hugged me to him, hard. Then I will do as you ask, Lyssa. Thank you. My eyes were brimming with tears. We both knew my hope wasn't founded in reality, but I wasn't yet able to admit how far gone my comfortable world was. I needed him to buy into my dream, however crazy it was. Now go, before someone figures out what happened. I pulled away. I will make it out of here, he assured me, and I know who to ask for help. I just have to find them. Sounds good. I gave him the pass card and boots, then sat on the prison bed. With a long, final look at one another, Heracles pulled on his mask and left. I closed the prison door behind him and sat down on the bed, suspecting Adonis was going to figure out what I had done soon enough. As I waited, I struggled not to doubt my guardian. He had given me no real reason to, except lying to me my whole life. It was too quiet in the tiny cell, too small for me to exercise or work off some of my apprehension and worry. The guards came to the door and opened it an hour later. Ugh. I was hoping not to deal with Adonis directly. He stepped into the room. I lifted my head from the wall behind me and waited to hear what he had to say. A man this striking should speak in rainbows and puppies. Not be in charge of the organization that suppressed humanity and tortured people. You had the chance to leave, he noted and studied me. Why didn't you take it? You have information I want, Adonis. The subtle draw was back like an itch I couldn't reach. It left me warm and agitated. You can leave me here, by the way. I'm happy in a cell. Far be it from me to make you unhappy. But since I'm the only one you can't outsmart or outrun, you'll stay with me, he replied with cool sarcasm. The reminder of how unnatural his skills were didn't help my irritation. He motioned me out of the cell. I went, mostly because I was afraid to push him when I was trapped in a room that small. The nearness of Adonis made my instincts so sensitive. Everything agitated me. A guard escorted us out of the prison building. I couldn't take the thick silence between us, or the fear I was in the kind of trouble I didn't know how to get out of. I kept telling myself that Heracles was free and would come for me. I just had to survive on my own here a day or two, and I could do that. But this... I stared at the back of his head, not understanding how I was dutifully following him down the corridor like a puppy, when I knew I should at least try to run. Because he knows me. I wanted to learn more about being an oracle in my past, and this man, claimed to have that knowledge. If I could survive him long enough to learn. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being stuck on the couch again tonight and 10 being flayed alive, where am I in terms of trouble? I asked finally. 3. I invented the scale and had no idea what that meant. What alarmed me? His response wasn't 1. So you are upset about Heracles leaving?
Not at all. He served his purpose. I didn't impede his escape.
Holy Zeus. Adonis knew all along. He was toying with me, once more the predator. Then why a 3? I demanded.
You moved slower than I expected. I'm a little disappointed.
I almost choked to keep from speaking. Stop falling for it, Lissa. He's playing games with you. It was unnerving. I had to stop folding to my discomfort and just shut up, as Nico had ordered me. So I did. I said nothing all the way back to his apartment. He left me there, alone, no guard, no handcuffs. This was the part of his game where I cringed and admitted he was right. I was blindly volunteering to stay in the hopes he at least enlightened me about who I was before he did whatever they did to oracles. I had the distinct feeling I'd one day look back on this moment and wish with all my heart that I'd run. But for now, I was staying put. Rustling came from the direction of his bedroom. I started towards the open door, but stopped.
I'm not alone.
This instinct was the worst. Turning, I spotted someone in a military urban camouflage uniform dropping onto the balcony from the direction of the roof. He was followed by 4 more men, all armed to the teeth. They entered the open space.
Sorry, kid. Boss wants you back now.
Nico pulled off his mask.
You gonna come quietly? Help Uncle Nico get a second bonus?
Whatever I can do to help you pay your child support, I retorted. I was really starting to hate him. He held up a pair of handcuffs.
Well then come on, you little shit.
He was an asshole, and Heracles believed Adonis was bad news. I needed to know who my parents were, but at what cost? No one I'd met yet seemed remotely trustworthy. The weapons of his men were trained on me. He wasn't taking chances this time. Let me get something first, I replied and strode into the bedroom before he could object. A man like Adonis had to have some sort of weapons around. He was always lightly armed compared to the other CISA members and the military guys with Nico, but there had to be something. The teddy bear on his bed made me look twice. If I had time, I'd have laughed at the idea that a demigod slept with a teddy bear. I ransacked his closet and chest of drawers without finding anything but clothing. He had the personnel here needed to secure a prison with 1 occupant, Heracles, and a single doctor to run a DNA scan. The only markings on the walls were for the prison, the only offices in use for the doctor and 1 government employee, and no armory was anywhere in the compound I could find. If it weren't so improbable, I'd have thought this place was a trap for 1 person. I was beginning to suspect that poor idiot was me.
Come on, Lissa, Nico called.
I possessed nothing to use as a weapon, not even my lucky knife. With no real options before me, I decided to go with Nico and wait for an opportunity to escape. The odds were better facing him and his men than Adonis. I emerged from the bedroom. Nico and his military guard weren't alone. 4 men in dark purple, the color of the Royal Guard, the security arm of the Silent Queen, stood behind Dozy. This time the High Priestess was dressed for a fight, well-armed and wearing fatigues like her men. Before I could figure out what was happening, the door to the apartment opened. Adonis entered, flanked by 2 of his own men. Not that he needed them. If he showed up alone, it was enough for the others to be uneasy. CISA, military, Royal Guard. It didn't take Leandra explaining what was happening for me to understand what was going on.
This was a triumvirate turf war. Over me. Adonis was the first to act. He launched at Nico and smashed him into the men with him before he kicked Dozy back. Settling into a fighting stance, he waited.
I'm not picking a fight with you, Adonis, Dozy said. You entered a CISA property without permission.
I call that picking a fight, Adonis replied.
Agreed. Whereas I was invited, Nico said.
You were not invited, Adonis replied in the same tone.
I've already alerted the Supreme Priest, who will ensure the Silent Queen and Magistrate are aware.
This was authorized, Nico replied. His preference for the military over CISA began to make sense.
Nico was one of them.
Same, Dozy said, and stretched for the knives at her back.
By all rights, protocol, custom, and tradition. She was supposed to come to us first.
I was authorized to use lethal force.
How about you boys?
Nico glared at her.
Thought so. May Ares bless your weapons like Artemis has mine.
Dozy drew her weapons and lowered into a fighting stance.
The usual rules, no firearms.
Let's get this over with. Mesmerized by the three of them, I could deduce several pieces of information. The first, they all knew each other well enough to tell me this type of politics happened often. Second, if they were messing with each other, their leaders weren't all on the same page like the news claimed they were. Third, Dozy could fight. And that made me extremely happy after being told by the nymphs and priests at school fighting wasn't a proper womanly pursuit. The three all drew weapons and began circling one another. Their companions stood back. I assessed my situation. The fastest and safest exit strategy was probably going to be the balcony and the ropes Nico's men had used to drop onto the balcony. I couldn't see whether the rest of Adonis's forces were outside the closed entrance door of the apartment. Three of Nico's men were between me and the balcony. With their attention on their fighting leaders, I just had to time this right.
Sparks flew off the weapons, smashing into each other. Dozy had started, and Nico joined in. The three began a deadly dance as skillful as it was scary. Adonis was unmatched as far as speed, but Nico and Dozy managed to team up on him between taking swipes at each other. The two of them were amazing, and the dynamic of all three of them locked into a battle to the death held me in place. Until I realized the others were equally entranced and no one seemed to think I was capable of anything like I planned. For once, I wasn't upset about being underestimated. I inched closer to the men in my direct path, eyes on the three warriors, holding nothing back. I was secretly rooting for Dozy, hoping Adonis didn't get killed, and not at all concerned about Nico. Their fight moved away from the balcony, pulling one of their military members with him. With two between me and escape, I didn't wait. Snagging a knife from the nearest, I smashed him over the back of the head with both hands, then sprang forward to knock the other off balance as he turned to see what the noise was. Heracles had taught me to disable rather than use lethal force, though I knew how to kill as well. But I didn't. I smashed an elbow into the second man's nose, then punched him in the throat. He bent over, gagging. I slid the hilt of the knife between my teeth and darted to the nearest rope. The courtyard below held five of Adonis's men. Up it is, I murmured. With a quick tug, I confirmed it had hold and began to half-pull, half-walk my way up the side of the wall. I was close to the roof when I heard someone shout to alert the three fighting. The sound of them pounding into one another ceased. I focused hard and moving as quickly as possible, not caring about my burning arms and thighs as I neared my destination.
Kid!
Nico shouted and grabbed the rope I was on, wrenching it back from the wall. Dozy was scaling her way up a second rope. Adonis had disappeared. I'm not a kid. Clamping down on the knife so hard it hurt my jaw, I hauled myself the rest of the way up with upper body strength and reached the top. I dragged myself over the top and dropped, panting from the effort.
Not about to give someone like Adonis the time to take the stairs to the roof, I decoupled 5 of the ropes rapidly before starting to cut Dozy's free. "Go back, Dozy," I called, sawing through it. "Not on your life." She was as stubborn as Nico. I didn't bother to check and see if she was okay after the rope snapped free, but stood back and looked around wildly. Nico's men had gotten up here somehow. I could escape the same way. My gaze settled on the grappling equipment on the far side of the roof. I dashed towards it and caught myself on the wall, leaning over to see the rope dangling into another of the plentiful courtyards. This one butted up against the wall of the compound. With any luck, I could scale that wall too, or find my way back to the exit I'd found earlier for Heracles. People were shouting from somewhere in the buildings. I wasn't sticking around to find out which of the security forces was going to win and grab me. I slung one leg over the edge of the roof and gripped the rope. A throwing knife grazed my calf, and I glanced down. It pinned my pants leg to the wall behind me. There was only one man I'd bet money on to make that shot, and I wasn't about to let him near me. I bent over to pull at the knife, only to find it was too sleek to grip. Dropping the cable rope, I strained to wriggle the knife free frantically. "Stop now, Alessandra," Adonis warned. "God damn it!" I straightened and wrenched back. The knife didn't give on the first try, so I yanked again. This time it did, and I toppled backward, clutching at the rope. A rush of adrenaline flooded me as I began to fall. A sense of déjà vu swept over me, and I was once more in my dream, falling. Falling, waiting for Heracles to catch me. Adonis snatched my wrist, and I looked up, startled. I shook off the weird sense. "I won't let you fall," he said. I laughed. "It's okay, it's not far, and I'd rather have a broke leg than..." I yanked at his grip. The rope was right beside me anyway. I wasn't going to fall more than a couple of feet. "You're a fool," he breathed. "Yeah, now let go." I tried to pry his hand off my wrist with my other hand. When that failed to work, I reached for the red cord around my wrist. "Stop!" Adonis snatched my other wrist. I heard the sounds of more than one person running towards us. From the look he cast over his shoulder, they weren't his men. He kept his grip on the wrist with the red cord and released my second hand. I expected him to draw a weapon, but he snatched the rope. Seconds later, he leapt over the edge of the roof. The man had a serious set of feline reflexes. I could barely register what was happening while he was reacting. He grabbed me around the waist and slid us both down the rope until my feet hit the ground. It happened too fast for me to react, and the moment we were safe, the arm around my waist was around my neck. "If you kill her, Adonis," Nico yelled from the roof. I was able to see the shadows of him and Dozy on the ground, along with several other forms of their guards. "Game over. Leave, both of you," Adonis returned. "Don't give up now," I called. "The Triumvirate wants you alive. They don't care if you're missing limbs. Do not tempt me." These words were for me, spoken close enough to my ear for his warm breath to brush my skin. I shivered. His grip was tight, but not yet severing my air supply. Heracles would say he was going for control rather than the kill. I was hauled against his hard body, once again aware of his scent and the strange sense of familiarity I hadn't yet shaken. This wasn't the calm Adonis that challenged me to a race. This was the Adonis who was about to use one of the weapons he carried. And I didn't think even he knew who he was going to use it on. I stretched for my knife, not about to ruin the only good escape opportunity I had. Dozy was descending the wall rapidly. Nico was gone, and I assumed he was taking the stairs. Adonis hauled me to face Dozy, one of his weapons out. I waited until she was close enough to engage him, then smashed my heel into one of his feet, stabbed him in the arm with my knife, and wrenched away. Adonis released me. I stumbled away, caught myself, and bolted. He showed no sign of pain, but deflected Dozy's strikes and then pushed her aside. "If you run, you'll never know who you are," he called after me. I stopped at the mouth of a passageway. The words were kryptonite. I wanted a way, yes, but I wanted to know who I was, too. Why I was important.
Run, Dozy cried. You don't know what they'll do to you.
I can return your memories to you, Adonis added. I turned to face him. No one can do that. It's one of the benefits of working for a demigod representing the gods on Earth. A direct line to Nemazenae. I glanced at Dozy, who hadn't yet lied to me that I knew.
Is that true?
Probably, but it's irrelevant. Assuming you survive the trials, the Supreme Priest and Supreme Magistrate will enslave you with your magic. It sounded a lot like what the priests had told me. I'll spare the girls and priests we found in the town nearest your compound, Adonis added, and took two steps towards me. My breath caught. The other priests had died because of me. I couldn't let that happen to those remaining, or to the nymphs, however many hadn't escaped. They were in Sisa control because of me. Okay. I dropped my knife and raised my hands.
Alessandra,
Dozy objected. I'm with Sisa. For now, I replied. Adonis strode towards me, none too pleased, and kicked the knife away. He pulled my arms down and cuffed me.
Leave, Theodosia, he said to the High Priestess. Take Nico with you, or I'll toss him in prison.
You can have him. Dozy was frowning. What are you planning on doing with her? I looked at Adonis at the question.
Submit her to the first trial, he replied. Before the other members of the Triumvirate interview her?
I have my orders.
And you always follow your orders.
The look they shared told me they knew a lot more about each other than I did about anyone I'd met.
I don't have to tell you or the Supreme Priest. This is highly unusual.
She deserves some prep time or something. Adonis dropped my hands. If she's the Oracle, she'll survive. If not, she won't.
My interest increased.
Why? Is it dangerous? I asked, excited at the chance to put the skills I spent a lifetime learning to use.
Like, really dangerous?
Dozy appeared ready to chastise me the way she did Nico. Adonis's expression was that of scrutiny, as if he was trying to figure out if I was messing with him.
Shut up, kid, Nico growled, emerging from a nearby hallway. Even you aren't stupid enough to want to go through the trials without preparing for them.
He sheathed his weapons.
My employer called me off with a promise he's got some words for your boss about how she's being handled, Adonis. You win this round.
Nico stalked towards the front of the compound, trailed by his entourage.
Next time, Dozy promised the quiet head of Sisa.
Find your way to the Silent Queen and me, Alessandra. We won't imprison you.
Sounds good, I replied. I watched her leave as well before Adonis stepped away.
Do you really have my friends?
I do.
Nico killed four of them.
They're better off.
I didn't like that at all. But you'll spare the others now.
Will you go through the trials without me forcing you into them?
Yeah, sure. Can't be that bad. He shook his head.
You're something else. If you're not the Oracle, you're the bravest fool I've ever met.
From him, I was certain it was a compliment of sorts.
Submit to the first trial, and they'll be freed, he added. Try to escape again, and I'll kill them off in front of you, one by one.
No need for threats. I raised my hands and took a step towards the center of the compound. I'm cool with this. What are these trials? He gave me an indecipherable stare.
Assume I know absolutely nothing about what's going on, I said impatiently. I'm not fighting you. I'm just asking a legitimate question.
He studied me.
Usually, three gods sponsor the incoming oracle and design trials to challenge her. Test her magic, mental toughness,
and willingness to obey them, he explained. The gods were too preoccupied to nominate sponsors for you, so each member of the triumvirate is giving you a trial instead. You'll receive 3 tasks you must complete. What happens if I don't? You'll never have full access to your power.
I can do more than create earthquakes?
It can't be that bad. Adonis lifted his chin towards the hallway behind me in a silent command. I retreated to the passageway leading into the compound, then stopped. No voices came from the area, but my intuition was doing it again, tingling. I returned to the corner, looking into the courtyard. Adonis was alone. He was on his knees, holding his head, face scrunched up in pain. I watched him, not expecting the man with the strength and agility of a great cat to be vulnerable or hurt. He didn't look as if anyone had touched him from the fight with Dozy and Nico. I'd nicked his arm, but he didn't seem affected by the wound. His hands lowered to his sides, and he shook his head and rose. I eased back and hurried away on tiptoes through the compound to the apartment, without crossing any of his men. It would be so easy to flee. But I wasn't going to risk the lives of anyone else I'd grown up with. I returned to his apartment and nudged the door closed behind me with my hip. Something was rustling again. I inched forward towards the source of the sound in his bedroom and pushed the door open. I was expecting to see someone left behind from Nico or Dozy's camp, but no one was present. The sound was gone, too, and I scoured the room, spotting the last thing I ever expected to see in the room of a man like Adonis. I laughed. I forgot about you. I crossed to his bed and sat down, grabbing the stuffed animal resting against one pillow with my bound hands. No way he has a toy like this. The stuffed koala bear was ancient, its original tan fur visible in the crease of one ear. The rest of it was darker, dirtier brown. It smelled clean, despite its grungy appearance. You wouldn't happen to have any handcuff keys, would you? I asked it, playfully. Dresser. I looked around. It was almost like a whisper, but not quite audible. Like it was in my head. Taking the toy with me, I went to the dresser I had ransacked earlier for a weapon, and this time searched out a handcuff key. Awesome, I said, and set the toy down. I unlocked my cuffs, then tossed them on the dresser. Come on, little guy. I picked up the bear and went into the living area. Chapter 10. My latest escape plan foiled, I did what any teenager would do. I flipped on the television. Accompanied by Adonis's toy, I sank onto the couch, my attention at once snagged by the news. Real news. None of the censored stuff the priest fed us at the orphanage. Except as soon as I began watching, I began to feel ill. The world outside my forest was ugly, and the people untrustworthy, but it seemed far better than what was going on outside of the region entirely. The death toll this year outside the wall has reached 10 million, 10% lower than last year. Experts claim the trend has been decreasing every year since the Holy Wars began 5 years ago, which they take as a sign the wars between the gods are losing steam due to the political posturing of Sisa and the military, claimed one anchorman. Fantastic news, James, said the woman beside him. With 43 states under official martial law, many are crediting the military and supreme magistrate with keeping the peace. I watched in interest as they showed stock images from the wall and a map of the territories claimed by the gods and goddesses, as well as those currently conflicted. The map of North America was riddled by colors indicating pockets of different deities as territorial claims. Images from those areas were horrifying. Smashed towns, long bread lines, massive temples in perfect condition where the gods and goddesses lived, surrounded by destruction and images of the extreme poverty and disease afflicting humanity. The television flipped off. I blinked, stunned, and faced the door. Adonis had a second remote and tossed it on the couch.
Is this real? I asked.
Is what real?
The wars. The wall.
He eyed me.
How do you not know anything?
We were sheltered. But you're telling me the continent has been torn apart by God's infighting?
Not the continent. The world, except for about 1,000 square miles of the eastern seaboard, and Mount Olympus in Greece, their adopted home here. My jaw dropped. This wasn't what the priests had taught us. The deities grant favors for a price and manipulate humans as required to amass their power and money.
It's the way it's always been, Adonis said.
But the sacred triumvirate is supposed to balance their power with humanity.
They did, at one point. Power is all that matters now, Alessandra. Power, influence, control. The gods have been at war with one another on Earth for 5 years, which is why it's important we found you. We weren't planning on you appearing quite so soon before my master had a chance to complete his preparations.
5 years. There it is again.
But I was too incensed to follow that line of thought. Isn't the Supreme Priest the liaison between gods and people? Can't he make the gods stop hurting everyone?
Politics at this level are about one thing. Power. No cause, no morality, no concerns other than power and survival matter once you reach the triumvirate.
He gave me a look, saying he didn't quite believe I was so naive. I stared at the blank television screen. I was beginning to understand better why the old ways were needed, but I didn't know why the priests hadn't just come out and told us all about what was going on in the world. What else were they hiding?
Your first trial awaits, Adonis said. My master has given me your tasking.
The trial didn't sound that bad. If anything, it sounded easy. I knew myself well enough to believe I could withstand anything. After the trials, I get my powers and I can stop the wars, right?
If the triumvirate wishes it.
Like I care if they do. 10 million people have died this year. The Oracle helps people.
The Oracle obeys her masters.
No. I shook my head. I don't care what they want. I'm going to do what's right. Send the gods home and free the people.
You think you have a choice?
I hated it when he said something like that. The only way to uncover exactly what was going on was to face these trials and come out on the other side an official oracle. Whatever this test consisted of, it couldn't be that bad. I was trained for everything, and I had the additional motivation of knowing I could save the world. I picked up the teddy bear. You stay here, I said sternly. Hey, why do you have this?
Adonis's cold glare was his only response.
Whatever. Where's the first trial? Propping up the stuffed animal where it could see the television, I stood and went as close to Adonis as I dared. He tilted his head toward the entrance to the apartment.
Courtyard. It's here? Yes, but first...
His eyes went to the bear and lingered.
First, you've been blessed by Namazani.
Namazani, the goddess of memory. Excitement rushed through me. What does that mean? I meet her? She returns my memories?
You're the brave fool.
Go find out. Intrigued, yet certain he was setting me up for something quite awful, I went to the door.
You'll need this. He called after me.
Turning, I caught the sheathed hunting knife he tossed me. Thanks. How long does it take for her to return my memories?
Do I look like a god?
Yeah, but... Hearing my response, I groaned. Never mind. I'll go see the goddess, then to the courtyard. He stood, stoic and still, hands crossed in front of him. I was getting no information out of him. But at least he hadn't reacted to my comment about him looking like a god. A trickle of red seeped from one of his nostrils.
Nosebleed, I said.
He touched it gingerly, then rested his knuckle on his temple temporarily. You have a headache? I asked, sensing the strange weakness in him I'd witnessed in the courtyard. A man this strong didn't seem susceptible to the headaches I got with my fall sinus infections.
Not your concern. Peppermint helps. Or you could...
My eyes swept over the couch again. I thought I put it up on the cushion. His teddy bear was lying on its head on the floor. Crossing to it, I plucked it up and replaced it, this time in a corner.
Stay. Your daddy has a headache and can't pick you up.
You are the most bizarre person I've ever met, Adonis said. Is there any sense in there at all?
I shook my head at him and returned to the door.
See you in a few, I said. This time I didn't hesitate but opened the door and stepped into the hallway. Or, more accurately, into a forest. I stopped in place, startled, and stretched out one hand towards the side of the hallway I should have been able to feel if this were a mirage. Nothing. A warm breeze swept the scents of flowers and earth by me, and pine needles rustled far overhead. I started to turn to see if I could still see Adonis. The forest surrounded me on all sides. The door had vanished. As far as I could tell, I'd stepped into a different world.
Could be stranger, I told myself.
If my trial were surviving the woods, I'd be set. But supposedly I wasn't here for my trial. I was here to find a goddess who held my memories. I started into the forest, and then I glimpsed it through the foliage. A wall stretching from the earth towards the heavens, made of what appeared to be concrete.
Different world? Or somewhere else in my world?
Eager to see if what the news said was true, I headed in that direction.
Chapter 11 Know Thyself. Thales. The wall was sheer, with no stairs, doors, or ladders with which to scale it. After trotting back and forth along a kilometer stretch, I rested my hands on it. It was cool to the touch, and my palms came away chalky.
Not concrete. Not stone.
I had no idea what the material of the wall before me really was, though I was grateful it appeared to be porous and more prone to chipping than, say, marble. I retreated to the forest. I had a knife and the forest to supply me with materials to help me scale it. Because I was meant to. The woods extended in all other directions with no end, and yet I was drawn only to the wall. I gathered some moss, flexible branches from saplings, and four chubby sticks the length of my forearm. Piece of cake, I sang to myself, thrilled Namazani thought to challenge me to a game of survival. I'd spent years learning from Heracles, and was eager to put my knowledge to good use, and maybe even impress a goddess. Beneath the warm afternoon sun, I set to work creating the tools I'd need to scale the wall. The rope took me several hours to create, and I went back twice to the forest for more saplings and moss until I'd braided a cord about 2 meters in length. Setting it aside, I carved points into one end of the fat branches and then spent a few grueling moments starting a fire with the first point. I rubbed it into the channel I'd created, fast and hard, rotating it as I went. My goal wasn't a fire, but to help crystallize the points of the branches, to make them harder than wood, so they stood a chance against the wall. Glancing at the sun, I sat back once I was done with all four.
Definitely not the real world, I observed.
The sun hadn't moved despite the hours of work I put into my preparations. The breeze was steady and warm, the sound of pine needles brushing one another soothing and pleasant. Any other time, I might not want to leave such a peaceful place. Shaking the thoughts away, I rose with my tools and crossed to the wall. I stretched upward and dug a tiny hole with my finger, placed the point of one branch into it, and then hammered it in with another. The branch went in with some resistance, causing a spray of chalky dust to rain down on me, I sneezed and tugged at it. It held. Pleased to discover my plan was going to work, I tied the rope around me, placed the belt and knife sheath around my hips, and tucked the extra stakes in the back of my pants. I began the arduous climb, using one stake to balance my feet and two to haul me up. With no worry about running out of room on a wall that ran for kilometers in each direction, I ascended at a diagonal, stair-stepping my way with excruciating slowness, careful not to move too far out of reach of the branch at my feet so I could wriggle it free and move it. I was careful to anchor my rope to the highest stake as I went. Foot, hand, hand, foot. I made a song of the climb. My enthusiasm held out until I began to wear down physically. Sweat rolled off my face and tickled my neck and chest. I took a breather, wishing I'd thought to drink a liter or two of water before I started. I looked down and up to gauge my progress. This is... good, I said aloud. I think. I was far from the ground, but didn't seem any closer to the top of the wall. I rested for a moment. The sun still hadn't moved, but I was wearing down. If I had to guess, I'd have said it was close to my normal bedtime, around 9 in the evening. I had no food and no water, and I was stuck in the middle of a wall. I really wish I had a... I grunted and stretched to bury the branch in its next hold. Hippolectrion. It could fly me to the top, and then I could eat it for dinner. I laughed at the idea of the horse-chicken creature from Greek mythology. Heracles never cared for the monsters, but I found them fascinating. I soon returned my full focus to making sure I didn't misplace any hand or foot and end up plunging to my death before I'd seen what was on the other side of the wall. Just as I was beginning to wonder how long it would remain midday in this odd place, the sun plunged towards the horizon and disappeared. Within seconds. Startled, I twisted as far as I dared to see the sky. I was half a kilometer above the tops of the forest. A bright moon worthy of the goddess Selene herself was nestled into the bosom of Nyx. Stars glimmered around it. Heracles will never believe me when I tell him about this place, I murmured. The moon kept my climb from being impossible, but it was far more difficult to place the branch tips well without squinting to see. I took one and began chipping away at a new spot, using the now dulled tip to create a small hole in the wall. Tap, tap, tap. I squinted to see if it was deep enough, only to realize the sound continued. Tap, tap, tap. Three more times it went. I froze and then shook my head, sensing I was close to exhaustion. I tapped twice more with the dulled point and stretched back, ready to plunge the branch into the concrete with what strength remained. Tap, tap. I lowered my arm. More than my exhaustion was at work here. I tapped the wall again, and more tapping answered. Forcing my tired mind to focus, I swiveled my head to my right, the direction the sound came from, and gasped. A Hippolectrion was pecking the wall with its beak. With the body of a horse and the legs, head, and tail of a chicken, it had wings and was uglier than I expected. I stared at it, wanting to dismiss the possibility it existed, before recalling that I was in a magic place where the sun stayed overhead for over 12 hours and then dived across the sky to set in the time it took me to sneeze. You're smaller than I expected, I said to the creature, not 2 meters away from me. It was the size of my foot. Too little to eat. Too little to carry me on your back. The creature looked at me, as if waiting for me to tap again. I did, more out of curiosity than anything else. It pecked in response. And then it hit me. The creature wasn't flying. It was walking up the wall on spindly chicken feet. How in Hades is that possible? I muttered. I tapped the wall beside me. The creature tapped back, moving closer as it did. When it was within reach, I picked it up to study its feet. It squirmed with a clucking sound, but in the moonlight I could see its feet weren't magical, or suction cups or anything else. I dropped it away from the wall, unconcerned about it falling since it had wings. Rather than drop downward, the Hippolectrion landed on the wall again. With some caution, I drew one leg up from the branch it was on and rested my knee against the wall. My balance shifted to it, as if gravity itself were changing around me, and I felt the heavy sense of lying on my stomach. I lifted my second foot into place next, not about to lose my death grip on the two branches preventing me from falling. With incredulity making my heart sprint, I cautiously sat up. I was kneeling, bent over my handholds. The Hippolectrion began pecking again and walked on, as if bored now that I wasn't playing with it anymore. Disorientated, I released one hand, then the other, and risked a look in the direction that had been down seconds before. The forest was where it had been, and my stomach lurched at the idea I was about to fall. But I didn't. I breathed deeply and released my final grip on the branches. The Hippolectrion was 2 meters away again, pecking and pacing. With some apprehension, I stood. I didn't topple into the forest, and the wall beneath me didn't give out. Ha! I couldn't help the baffled laugh. I'll take it. I'm sick of climbing. Thanks for rotating the world for me, Atlas. Wrenching my remaining foot and handholds out of the wall, I tucked all but one into my cargo pockets and clenched the fourth in case the world's gravitation changed on me again. I began walking, then trotting up the wall towards the top, followed closely by a Hippolectrion that sometimes ran, sometimes flew to keep up. You have an interest in what's over the wall? I asked, slowing. It landed beside me without answering. The distance to the top of the wall was much greater than I expected, a full kilometer and a half past the point where I began walking. Finally, after 15 minutes, I saw the edge of the top come into view, and silently admitted I'd never have made it if I had to climb all that way. Readying my stake in case I was about to plunge down the other side, I knelt and leaned over the edge. The top of the wall was about a meter wide. I tapped on the surface, waiting for the Hippolectrion to test it out. The creature went. He didn't fall, just stood there. Okay. Please do it again, Atlas, I begged the Titan quietly. Blowing out a breath, I lay down on my stomach and crept over the top. My stomach dropped, and the same lurching sensation returned as gravity changed around me once again. I think this was a dream if I didn't know I was awake. I rolled onto the top and lay on my back, staring at the sky briefly. The Hippolectrion pecked at one of my hands, and I moved it out of reach. Tired, I nonetheless was excited to move on and shifted to my knees to peer at what lay at the bottom of the wall on the other side. A single solitary house stood half a kilometer from the foot of the wall. Otherwise, only darkness existed. Not the kind of darkness that occurred when the sun set. This was a natural nothingness. I wasn't certain what I expected of a blessing from Mnemosyne, but it wasn't this. I readied myself for the odd sensation of gravity changing and leaned carefully over the side of the wall, waiting for the unsettling sensation to leave my belly. All right. We're set, I said cheerfully and stood. You ready? I looked back. The Hippolectrion was gone. I guess not. I started forward down the side of the wall, not looking at the house, for fear of becoming disoriented once more. When I reached the bottom, I knelt and placed my hands on the grass ahead of me. Atlas, just one more. I toppled onto my face. God damn it, I muttered and sat up. Thanks anyway,
With a sigh, I looked around. Nothing else had appeared. Just the house. I dropped the stakes and rope at the wall and strode down a sidewalk towards the house. Nothingness ran on either side. I peered over the edge of the sidewalk once, then not again, not about to wade into the void on either side. Pausing in front of the two-story house, I studied it. Was I supposed to know it? Because it wasn't remotely familiar. A small porch and several windows faced me. It seemed so very normal, the kind of cookie-cutter suburbia I imagined everyone lived in, before learning the world was in a state of chaos brought on by warring gods. Namazani? I called. I wasn't expecting her to magically appear, and wasn't disappointed. I'd never been blessed by a god or goddess. I knew less of the protocol handling one of them than I did about the people who lived outside my forest. Uncertain if I was supposed to waltz in or knock first, I decided to be polite and knocked. The door creaked open under the force of my knock. I pushed it the rest of the way open. Lights I couldn't see from the outside glowed from the second floor of the house. Stairs were ahead of me, a formal dining room on one side of the foyer, and a formal living room on the other side. The hallway to the left of the stairwell led to a kitchen. Nightlights positioned in outlets along the walls lit up the bottom floor.